This is a podcast from the University of Manchester's Jodrell Bank Centre for Astrophysics. For more information, see jodcast.net.
So our astronomer this month is Dr. Anna Scaife. Anna, could you please introduce yourself?
Yeah, so my name's Anna. I moved to JBCA earlier this year, in February, and my research focuses on constraining the strength of very large-scale magnetic fields in the universe, mainly using radio observations.
Okay, thank you. Our first question this month is from Stanley Fertig. So Stanley has written, I have a question about the relativity correction in GPS satellites. Is it that because the satellites are moving faster than us, time moves more slowly for them? Or rather, as I suspect, being farther from the centre of the Earth than we, they feel less of a gravitational tug from the Earth, and therefore time moves faster for them than for us on the surface. Which is it?
Well, so the answer is that it's a combination of the two. So GPS satellites move at a rate of about 14,000 kilometres per hour. They move really quickly. So they're not geostationary. Lots of people seem to think that they're geostationary. So wherever you're standing on the surface of the Earth, the GPS satellites are moving relative to your position. So for any object that's moving, a clock relative to your stationary position on that object will appear to be running more slowly. Now, the faster the object's moving, the more slowly the clock will appear to be going. For GPS satellites, which are moving, you know, pretty fast in our terms, but not very fast in relativistic terms, there's a small correction of about 7 microseconds. So we would appear to see the clocks on GPS satellites running 7 microseconds too slow. Now, the other consideration is that they are further from the Earth than we are. So this is where the general relativity correction comes in. So general relativity tells us that clocks appearing closer to a point mass, to the centre of a mass, will appear to be running more slowly than those that are further away because of the way that space-time is curved. And so GPS satellites, which orbit at a height of about 20,000 kilometres above the surface of the Earth, will appear to therefore be going faster than they would on the surface of the Earth, relative to our stationary position closer to the centre of the Earth. That's actually a larger effect than the velocity correction. So the general relativity correction caused by the mass of the Earth is about 45 microseconds, and it goes in the opposite direction. So general relativity makes them seem to be going too fast, and special relativity makes them seem to be going too slow. And what you get is basically the difference of those two things. So the difference is 38 microseconds. Now, 38 microseconds is pretty small, but in order to get the positional accuracy that you need from GPS on the surface of the Earth, you need a temporal accuracy of about 20 to 30 nanoseconds. So that correction's really quite large in terms of the required accuracy. And so what people do, in fact, what the people who build the GPS satellites do, is they correct for the general relativistic term, the larger term, simply by slowing down the actual clocks on the satellites. If you want to correct for the special relativity term, that's done at the base stations on the Earth. So if you're building a GPS receiver, you have to take that correction into account yourself.
Thank you. Okay, our second question comes from Matthew Wilday. It's been about 100 years since Marconi started transmitting radio signals. Roughly how many stars are within the 100 light year bubble and thusly can be detected? I guess Gaia or Hipparchos data would tell us, but can't find it anywhere.
So Marconi claimed to have made the first transatlantic transmission in 1901. And in fact, at the time, no one believed him. It wasn't until a year later that he managed to make a verified transmission in 1902. So it has been about 110, 115 years. Now, where that transmission is now is a difficult question. So if it had been radiating out from the Earth into space, I guess the question is asking whether alien life forms could detect Marconi's signal within a bubble of 100 light years. If it was radiating out from the Earth, then firstly, it would be very weak by now. So the power of a radio signal is conserved over the surface area at which it expands. It's called the 1 over r squared law, which means that the original power that Marconi transmitted from the Earth would now be divided by the surface area of a sphere with a radius of 100 light years. So it would be tiny. In order to detect it, you'd need a massively sensitive detector, which may not be possible. However, that's if it managed to transmit into space. In reality, the signal probably didn't go anywhere. So Marconi used radio receivers that worked at very low radio frequencies, sort of hundreds of kilohertz to about a megahertz. And for signals like that, the Earth's ionosphere gets in the way. So there are two ways in which this happens. The first way is that the ionosphere can directly absorb signals. Now, the ionosphere is an area of the atmosphere which extends from about 60 kilometres above the surface of the Earth to about 100 kilometres above the surface of the Earth. Sorry, extends to about 1,000 kilometres above the surface of the Earth. But the lowest level of the ionosphere, which is called the D region, extends up to about 100 kilometres. And it's in the D region that radio signals get absorbed. And the reason this happens is that the D region is actually the most poorly understood region of the ionosphere, but it's very chemically rich and it contains a lot of neutral species. And so when the electrons which populate the ionosphere interact with these species, that absorbs the radio waves. So when a radio wave hits an electron in the ionosphere, it causes the electron to either re-emit or transmit that energy somewhere else. So if the energy gets re-emitted, then it can keep propagating. But what happens in the D region is because there are so many neutral atoms, the electrons tend to hit the neutral atoms and the energy gets dissipated in the collision, and so it just gets lost. So if Marconi made his transmissions during the day, it's very likely that they would just be absorbed by the ionosphere if they were travelling anywhere towards leaving the Earth. During the night, they might have made it through the D region, but they then would have got reflected by the higher levels of the ionosphere. So the critical frequencies at which the ionosphere transmits radiation are above 6 to 10 megahertz. So basically any radiation that has a frequency below that gets reflected back down to the Earth. And any radiation that has a frequency above that is allowed to pass through, perhaps on a rather refracted path. But for Marconi's transmissions at about a megahertz, they were either absorbed or reflected.
Okay, thank you. So we're not likely to have many questions from extraterrestrial listeners anytime soon.
No. Also, I think that Marconi only transmitted the Morse code for the letter S in his original tests. So I think that would be a rather enigmatic message to send out to alien life.
Slightly disappointing, but oh well.
Yeah.
Our final question comes from Russ Jenkins. It gets hotter the nearer you dig to the centre of the Earth. Is the same true for Mars? Can Mars colonists keep warm and safe from radiation by digging down into the ground?
This is an interesting question, and it's something that we actually think we might know the answer to, but we can't verify it at the moment. So we think that the centre of Mars is hotter than the surface, in the same way that the centre of the Earth is very hot, but we don't know that for certain. The way in which we could test it would be by looking at the propagation of seismic waves through Mars, but we haven't got the equipment to do that yet. There were some experiments done by a group in Switzerland who compressed basically molten iron to the temperature and pressure that would be expected at the centre of Mars to see if it remained liquid and very hot. And they concluded that it would do, given that the sulfur content was above a certain value, which was about 10%. So under certain circumstances, we think that the centre of Mars is very hot and molten, but the absolute answer is that we don't know at the moment.
Thank you very much for your time, Anna.